This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
I call the Senate Appropriations Committee to order. I'd like to welcome everybody listening on the internet. A reminder, turn your cell phones off so we don't have any disruptions today. And as we've got a committee member just drifting back in, we're running a little late from the joint committee hearing. So while we do that, we'll call the roll in just a moment, but our page is here. And just for the record, would you like to step up to a microphone, introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you're from, where you're going, and of course, how many kids in your class back home?
I'm Cody Fees. I go to Faith High School. I'm a senior. I'll be going to Shatter, Nebraska for nursing, and there's 17 kids in my class.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. So with that, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Nessaba.
Here.
White.
Here.
Sutton's excused. Partridge.
Here.
Maher.
Here.
Colbeck.
Here.
Greenfield.
Here.
Cronin.
Here.
Wick.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you, Senator Greenfield. Absolutely tremendous work. Much appreciated by the entire committee. With that, I would like to remind all testifiers to sign in, and if you're a lobbyist, make sure your badges are on display. And I see we already have handouts that were distributed by the pages. Thank you very much for that. Are there any personal privileges for anybody in the room today? All right, with that, all testimony and questions, please address them through the chair, and up for deliberation first. We have Senate Bill 116, an act to provide for the transfer of funds from the Future Fund to the Education Enhancement Trust Fund for the purpose of funding needs-based grants. Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 116? Senator Nessaba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's, as we approach lunchtime, I could see why you could be confused about feeding versus funding. But
I'm ready for feeding.
I know we're ready for feeding. So I am State Senator Reynold Nessaba from District 15, representing downtown Sioux Falls in the north end of town. And I'm here today to talk about Senate Bill 116 and urge you to vote this out of committee so we can have an opportunity to explain why we as a state need to find money for a need-based scholarship and why the Future Fund is a legitimate place to look for those funds. So this act provides for the transfer of funds from the Future Fund to the Education Enhancement Fund for the purpose of increasing the endowment through which we fund need-based scholarships. Need-based grants. My emphasis today is to make the case that we need to address this educational deficit, and secondly, to talk about the way in which the Future Fund has been used in the recent past. So, did you know that South Dakota has the second highest share of students with student loan debt in the nation? You can see this on the tables. Hopefully everybody has a copy of those. So I'm just looking at table one. And we also, students have the seventh highest average level of debt for those with loans. And here are two places South Dakota stands out and ranks in the top 10. More of our students have debt, and they have higher levels of debt than in the vast majority of other states. And, of course, we also have lower median income, so that actual debt burden is higher than those rankings would suggest. In short, our students and their families have a student loan debt problem, and that debt problem has mostly been created by us, by the way that we fund higher education in the state of South Dakota. We have failed to adequately provide financial assistance to our college students and their families, and this has been one of the things that's contributed to our ongoing workforce challenges in the state of South Dakota. So, table one, it shows historical data for the average student loan debt and their respective state ranks as summarized by the Institute for College Access and Success annual report. And this report indicates that South Dakota persistently has been identified as a high student loan debt state. As you can see in the rankings on that far right column, we have either been number one or number two, except for one year in 2014 when we were number six. But we are consistently, as a share of our students with debt, we are near the top. The only state that beats us at the moment is West Virginia. Virginia. So where 75% of our students are graduating with debt, West Virginia, the worst state in the country, has 77%. So we're almost there. We're almost competing for number one in terms of the share of our students with student loan debt. The second thing you can see on table one is that average level of debt. That average level of debt back in 2005 was at $19,724, and now in 2016, that number is $31,362. So in the span of 11 years, debt in South Dakota, the average debt for a South Dakota student rose $11,638. And what causes this? I didn't want to bury you with things, but I really do like this, the GOAC Performance Management Report, and that GOAC puts out. And on page 10 of that, they do point out that in terms of our state support per full-time equivalent, South Dakota contributes $5,955, which is dead last among all the students in our region, right? Montana, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming are all ahead of us. Where we're giving about $6,000. Montana was at $6,700, Iowa at $8,200, Minnesota at about $8,500, North Dakota at $9,300, Nebraska at $11,300, and Wyoming at $22,900, almost $23,000 in terms of state support per FTE overall. So in terms of just overall funding for FTEs, we underfund, but we even do worse when we start looking at need-based aid, as I'll show you here in a second. Let's go to the second page, which is figure one. It's titled Percent with Debt, Public Four-Year Institutions, 2005 through 2016. This also allows us to see both trends over time as well as how South Dakota compares to other states. And this is also from that the TCAS data system. You can see here that 75% of students with debt is far higher than Iowa, Minnesota, Montana, Nebraska, Wyoming, or for the U.S. as a whole. Our neighboring state of Wyoming had only 45% of students with debt, right, where we have 75%. Right, we're 30% ahead in terms of students with debt. Again, this is in part due to a lack of need-based scholarship. If you turn to the next page, this is titled Figure 2. This is the average debt of public four-year institutions. Here we look a little better compared to other states, although the rate has increased over time. Right, South Dakota is shaded here in yellow, where our average debt is at $28,332, which is it's about the same as the U.S. average, but ahead of Wyoming and Nebraska. But behind Montana, Minnesota, and Iowa. Again, we have higher levels of debt, and more of our students have debt than our surrounding states. This one tempers that a little bit, compared to Iowa, Minnesota, and Montana also having relatively high levels of debt compared to the country as a whole. Let me just keep moving forward on this. When we start to adjust this, though, when we start looking at this in terms of income, right, so it's not just the debt level, but since South Dakota has lower median incomes, yet we have high debt loads, right, relative to our median income, our debt burden is even greater. So if you flip to figure three, this is the percentage of family income needed to pay for full-time enrollment at public 2- and 4-year institutions, families with median incomes. And this came from the Midwest Higher Education Compact annual report. They were supposed to be here this week, but because of the cold, they've postponed their meeting, and they'll be out here in a couple of weeks. So the MEC member states in this figure are Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And you can see if we look at 2015, 2016, and we look at two-year institutions, South Dakota is the blue line. It would take a family at a median income, 19% of their income, to be able to afford a two-year school. And that would compare with 15% for the MEC average, 14% for the U.S. average, and only 10% for the top five states in the country. So we're about twice as bad as the best states in this in terms of being able to create accessibility. So 19% of an income would be required for access at a two-year school. If you then look over to the sixth set of bar graphs for 2015, 2016, looking at public four-year schools, you can see that South Dakota again stands out in the blue. It takes about 25% of family income to be able to afford access at a four-year school. That compares to 21% to our regional neighbors, 22% to the U.S. as a whole, compared to 17% for the very best schools. So again, we are high and stand out in a bad way in terms of affordability. It takes a big share of median family income to be able to go to a two-year school in South Dakota or to attend a four-year school. But it gets even worse if you flip over to Figure 4. Figure 4 is the percentage of family income needed to pay for full-time enrollment at public two- and four-year institutions. This would be for families in the lowest quintile. Economists like quintiles. That would be the bottom 20%, right? The bottom fifth. If you're in the bottom fifth, in 2015, 2016, you would see it would take you 45% of your income to be able to afford tuition and fees at a two-year school. And it would take 64% of your income if you were going to a four-year institution. And again, our other schools in the MEC group or in the U.S. as a whole also don't do very well here, but they do relatively better than we do, right? Where it would take 64% of folks in the lowest income quintile to afford a four-year education. It would be 47% for MEC schools, 50% for the U.S. as a whole, and the best states get it down to half of ours, right? They get it down to 32%. So again, the ongoing message of this is South Dakota students, we have higher shares of debt, we have higher levels of debt, and when you look at that in terms of our relative income, it makes it even more unaffordable for our students to get to college or to tech school, and this is contributing to our ongoing workforce development problems. Let's turn to one more. When we look at Figure 5, again, this is from MEC data. This is state need-based grant aid per full-time equivalent undergraduate student, a percent of aid defined as need-based. And they have two time frames here, 2003 to 2004 and also 2016 to 2017. And you can see here in terms of the amount of need-based aid that South Dakota, we're at $6, where we give about 4% of our total aid. That's the 4% is in the green box underneath there. So $6 of need-based aid for every full-time equivalent student, which is about 4% of our aid. But MEC states, most states do far more, right? They give 72% of their aid as need-based, $416. The U.S. as a whole, 46% of aid is need-based, $624. And the best states are doing $1,176 per every FTE at 88%. But that, too, understates it because we have more lower-income kids and as a share, and I didn't have this number easily handy from this, and I'd like to look this up, but I'm sure that we're overrepresented in terms of students who qualify for Pell Grants because of our lower incomes. And you can see this in Figure 6, which is the last one, and you've all seen this one, right? This is from the Board of Regents from their presentation a couple of days ago. When we compare South Dakota to other states in the region, Wyoming gives $2,620 for each Pell eligible student to assist them that would go to a tech school or to a public university or to a private nonprofit, $2,620. Minnesota is at $2,109. Colorado is at $1,263. North Dakota is at $1,081. Iowa at $863. Nebraska at $562. Montana is embarrassing at $27. And we're at less than, almost half of that embarrassing at only $17 for every Pell-eligible student. We just don't have a robust, we barely have any need-based scholarship funding whatsoever. So what my bill would do is it would take $5,000 out of the Future Fund and put it into the Educational Enhancement Fund. That's how we fund need-based scholarships in South Dakota. Somebody years ago, maybe some of you were here when that was created. It was before my time. To basically have it set up as an endowment fund. It has, I think, about $6 million in it at the moment. And the dividends or the interest from that throws off looking at staff for a second, I think it throws off $180,000 in rough amounts. So my $5,000 that we would throw in there would not solve this problem, right? It would increase that amount, but it would still keep us very much dead last or maybe competing with Montana, right? I mean, even now, if South Dakota increased its funding 100-fold, right, we'd be third in the region. Right, if we increased our need-based funding 100-fold, we'd be third in the region. Right, we are way behind on this, and we keep talking about workforce development. This has to be part of the ongoing conversation. We have to get this addressed, even if it's not this particular bill. But let's talk a little bit about the source of that fund. So, we need a funding mechanism, and I think the future fund is one possible place for that. And I am going to need the page's assistance here to hand out another document. Great, thank you. If there's any extras, maybe share those with audience members as well. And I'll pause while those are getting distributed.
All right. Yeah, just go ahead. More than half of us have them already.
Okay, great. So this is just a compilation of South Dakota Future Fund awards over the last few years. And in the governor's budget brief, the governor's budget address that she gave a week ago, she talked about a variety of things that she wants to have funded. Some of those things I think could very much be done out of our could be done from the future fund, or if they are funded out of the general revenue one-time money, then I think it's completely appropriate for this to be funded out of this. And it wouldn't be unique. We've used money in the past for tech schools, for instance. If you look at the bottom of the very first page there, there's a variety of funding that's come out of the future fund for Lake Area Tech, Mitchell Tech, Southeast Tech, Western Dakota Board of Technical Education that's come out of there. If you look at the very bottom right-hand side, I think that Board of Regents, some of that money for the Board of Regents, that was a bill that was in front of us last year. I think we were asked to pay for the Reed Network, and we voted against it, and it went from here and went over to the governor's office and got funded that way. So that was one possibility as well. There's a number of other things that might stand out for some of those. If you see toward the top, if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, sixth thing down, the South Dakota Ellsworth Development Authority, they've received funding every year going back to 2014 out of the Governor's Future Fund. And so, again, I know there's another request this year that we might want to ask about whether that could be there, or if it can't be there, that we could use $5 million of this future fund to fund a need-based scholarship and put it into the Educational Enhancement Fund. Another one I was somewhat curious about, on page 2, if you look under associations and nonprofits, you would see the South Dakota Habitat Conservation Foundation, and there's $1.1 million in there. When I read, if you go to the place on our website where you can pull up and actually look at that contract, it looks very much like her plan for pheasant conservation. So I'm just curious about the duplication between asking us for $1 million and $1 million here. Maybe this is the $1 million match. Which would be ironic. Again, I don't know. I haven't had a chance, and perhaps the folks I'm sure who will come and testify after this will be able to give some clarity to that. Again, on this page too, if you look at the top, that the USD Research Park out of the Future Fund last year, we spent, or for FY19, we spent $6.7 million there to encourage education. So it wouldn't be unprecedented to use money like this for educational purposes. This is just educational purposes, and it would be a need-based grant. And so I hope that in my testimony this morning that I've identified that this is a serious problem. We are inadequate by any measure. Too many of our families have a bigger share of debt. They have higher levels of debt than other states around us and in the country as a whole. I've identified one possible source of funding that we could use to fund this. I don't think this is the only solution, but I really look forward to working with all of you around this table this year and next year to figure out a way to start putting to make this a priority, that we need to address this for workforce development, to balance the just balance fairness between what the students are paying, what their families are paying, and what the state is paying, and to get us on a foundation that makes us competitive with other states. So I'm happy to stand by for other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nesseba. Any other proponents for Senate Bill 116? Further proponents? Welcome back to your favorite room in the building, Representative Ring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ray Ring from District 17, Clay and Turner Counties. And I'm so happy to be back. You know, somebody asked me the other day if there's another state in the another state legislature in the country with two PhD economists. I don't know of any. And then he said, and I think his source, which I won't name, but I think is pretty reliable, there are none in the U.S. Congress. And, you know, you can draw whatever conclusion you want from that, but I think it is not too surprising. So I want to follow up with just a few more. Those of you who have been around a while know that I like to talk about numbers, too. So I'm going to follow up with a few more numbers, and particularly, excuse me, maybe try to relate them a little bit more to the income distribution and why we need this particular needs-based scholarship, or more support for needs-based scholarships. And I'll start with just a reminder that yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, when President Gestring was here, there was a question about a decline in enrollment or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And she pointed out that, and it's here in the Regents report, that a resident student in South Dakota pays $16,251 in total, undergraduate resident in total costs, and that's about the middle of the rank for surrounding states. But we had the fastest growth rate in that. The maximum Pell Grant this year, I looked up, is $6,095. So we're looking at students paying $10,000 out of pocket even after the Pell Grant. And for particularly low-income students to find that kind of money, or their parents to find that kind of money, is clearly very difficult. I looked up some figures on college affordability from a center that studies these things from the University of Pennsylvania and Vanderbilt. And I'd begin with this figure. On average, 41% of working-age South Dakota state residents, age 25 to 64, have an associate's degree or higher. So that's 41%. By 2020, 65% of jobs will require an associate's degree or higher. If that's not a workforce issue, I guess I don't know what is. Professor Nesseba talked about some of the percentages of income that it takes. I will just add to that from my figures here by talking about the ranking, where we stand with relative to the rest of the country. In terms of public two-year institutions, we're 45th in terms of affordability, and that mean, and that's 40, and that ranking puts us then close to the bottom. We're 45th in the percentage of income that would be needed to attend college full time. We're 36th for four-year non-doctoral and 34th for research institutions, which is USD and SDSU. He already talked about quintiles. The figures I have are a little bit different, although the $0 to $30,000 range is 19%, so it's close enough. 66% of income, so I'm sort of repeating what he said, but this is from a different source and I think reinforces what we're talking about. For public four-year non-doctoral institutions, people in the income range from $0 to $30,000 have to pay 66% of their income for net tuition and fees. Just a couple other figures here. The percent of family income on average after, and this is for, I believe, 2016, after all financial aid to pay educational costs, we rank 45th. Let's see. I have one other that I marked here. I guess I don't. A couple other figures. For South Dakota, tuition is a percent of total educational revenue, and this is from data that's provided by SHEO, the State Higher Education Officers Organization. That's what it is. So the Jack Warners of the world and later, obviously. Tuition as a percent of total educational revenue for the U.S. is 46%. So roughly 50-50 state appropriations. And what they do for this study is take out all the other grant money and all that sort of thing and just look at tuition and state appropriation to pay for educational costs. So it's roughly 50-50 in the U.S. between tuition and appropriations. And the dependence on tuition has actually been decreasing slightly for the last few years. So 46% for the U.S., 64% for South Dakota. It's the ninth highest percentage in the country. Our tuition per FTE is about 50% above the U.S. average and has increased by 53% since the recession. And that's not an increase in dollars. That's an increase in purchasing power that's adjusted for inflation. So tuition students' actual costs after adjusting for the cost of living, 50% higher now than it was during the recession. So we're ninth highest in dependence on tuition. We're 17th highest in state support per $1,000 personal income. You know, that 64% figure, I can remember, so it's tuition accounts for about two-thirds of the cost of education in South Dakota. I can remember when those numbers were roughly switched, I'm old, but I'm not that old. Not too many years ago when tuition accounted for about a third of the cost and state appropriations accounted for about two-thirds. And again, it seems clear to me that this is a workforce issue, that the importance of college education or of post-secondary education is critical, and if we don't do more to support that, we're particularly failing to provide opportunity to a large proportion of our potential workforce. If we educate them more, they'll be more productive, they'll have more wages, they'll pay more taxes, and we'll be better off as a whole. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will gladly stand by for questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Ring. Any other proponents for Senate Bill 116? Any further proponents for Senate Bill 116?
No other proponents for Senate Bill 116. We will now open it up to opponents for Senate Bill 116.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Brittany Skipper. I'm representing the Bureau of Finance and Management in opposition of Senate Bill 116. As you heard from the previous testimony and from the Board of Regents when they were here earlier this week, we know that the cost of post-secondary education can be a barrier for some students to obtain a degree. Affordability continues to be a reason why some students don't attend or graduate from higher education. There are different ways to attempt to address affordability, whether it's keeping the cost of tuition down through finding efficiencies, filling the financial aid gap, or filling the gap with state general funds, scholarships, or federal financial assistance. Taxpayer dollars have been invested in the Regental system, with 44% of their operating budget being funded with state dollars. $6.5 million is budgeted annually for the merit-based scholarship, which allows South Dakota's most academically accomplished high school graduates to receive an affordable education at any university, college, or technical school in South Dakota. $5 million in one-time money was also invested in a needs-based endowment where interest earned is used to fund grants for eligible students. This bill seeks to use money from the Future Fund, which receives revenue from an investment fee that employers pay. This fee is collected at the same time unemployment insurance taxes are collected, and the rate is determined by the same reserve ratio used to determine the unemployment insurance tax rate. Other than the collection method, the two fees have separate purposes. The investment fee is transferred to the Governor's Office of Economic Development, and they are statutorily required to use the Future Fund for purposes related to research and economic development for the state. They use the Future Fund for workforce development, initiatives that have widespread economic impact, to help facilitate business client opportunities, and for research leading to commercialization of new business opportunities. For instance, this fund was used to help build the MAD Labs at Dakota State University, which are expected to generate 200 well-paying jobs in South Dakota, as President Griffith spoke about on Tuesday. The Governor's Office of Economic Development has identified projects and needed support for business client accounts for all currently available funds. This bill would dramatically reduce their ability to work with future clients and cost communities jobs and capital investment. With that, I urge a no vote and will stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Skipper. Any other opponents for Senate Bill 116? Any further opponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson. I'm a lawyer from Aberdeen and registered lobbyist, except you'll notice I took my lobbyist badge off. I rise to speak today as the resident historian on the Futures Fund, and that's sad to say, but I wrote the Futures Fund. When you look at the session laws that said it came in 1987, I was Secretary of Labor at the time for Governor Mikkelsen, and I did all the negotiating between the governor's people, our agency, the U.S. Department of Labor, and a great many of the business groups who came together to support the creation of the Futures Fund. Ever since then, I've been involved at some level in nearly every chapter of the legislative history involving the Futures Fund, as well as in many of the projects that you see on this list. I've had some strange jobs around here, but nonetheless, I'm here to offer whatever value that plays. I can tell you that at the time we negotiated this in 1987, it was very clear from the business community that they were rabid supporters of creating a mechanism like this, but they absolutely did not want it to be appropriated. So if you look at the legislative history about any futures fund bills over time, you will find almost unanimous involvement from the people in the cheap seats here, the lobbying community, opposing any appropriation of the Futures Fund, that they set it aside for the governor's office to use when they needed to do so. And sometimes you'll see that those things were accommodated in the futures fund. So I can almost guarantee you today that if we start appropriating the futures fund, the employer community in South Dakota would take it away from you. I don't represent the entire employer community in South Dakota these days, but I do have some other clients who might play a role in that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we would discourage the use of the futures fund for appropriations of this or almost any other thing that you might consider. There are others in the audience who may want to weigh in on it. I'll be in the building the whole session. If you ever have any other questions or anything else I can help you with, feel free to grab me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Any other opponents to Senate Bill 116? Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Owen, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and I've always been fond of what I was taught is Grandpa's Law. If something's working, don't fix it. The future fund has worked well. Now, the senator will claim during his rebuttal that it's not working as well as it might. Julie hit the key of this. The business community is willing to pay extra so a fund can be created for economic development that will allow governors to invest in opportunities and do the best job that the governor can do to take advantage of those opportunities without the delays and political pressures of appropriations. Do people disagree with what governors have done with the future fund? Lord, yes. But the elements that make it successful, it is better to tolerate those disagreements than to start appropriating it. Please defeat the bill.
Thank you. Any other opponents to Senate Bill 116? Any other opponents? Seeing none, Senator, a rebuttal, and you can do it from there if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Since all my papers are piled over here, I would be open to an amendment to this bill as well. Part of what I'm concerned about is that many of the anticipated expenditures that came out of the governor's proposed budget are things that I think she could very well spend out of the future fund. Whether it's $500,000 for Palisades, which I support, but that's the sort of thing that just in December they had $1 million for conservation. That would seem consistent with. So the $500,000 for Palisades seems very consistent with the $1 million they used for conservation funds. The money for the building at Ellsworth is money that's been appropriated in the past. And so I think there's a number of things that we should look very critically at when we are putting our own budget together and say, yeah, I think you could take that out. I think we could find $5 million there, actually, and we could change this bill so it would take it out of the money that was left over from last year instead of using the future fund. So if the future fund is going to continue to be used in the way that the business community wants it to be used for, I think they have some responsibility here as well to urge the governor to use it for those things and to not come and ask for general fund revenue from us when she's doing that. So that's part of it. We need to address this, and nothing would make me happier than for the governor to take the lead on this, to use these next 4 years to become a leader in education that she says she wants to open up opportunities. And so I would be happy to let the governor do this voluntarily instead of trying to legislate it. Nothing would make me happier, and I very much look forward to working with BFM and with Brittany and the rest of the folks in that office to work on this for the next couple of years. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now close public testimony and move to committee questions. Are there any committee questions? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, this would be for Senator Nesba, and if you can't answer that, I would be for BFNM. How much money goes into the Futures Fund every year? Where are we right now with that? How much is accruing?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and it's possible that I have a stack of handouts that I could ask the pages to distribute about that. So it looks like in FY 2018, it's about $17.4 million that are being distributed out of that. So it is a significant sum of money, $17 million that tax generates that goes to the future fund that is then distributed by whomever is the governor.
Follow up?
I would just have BFNM verify that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Brittany Skipper, BFM. The revenue was $17.8 million in fiscal year 2018.
That's what it accrues. That's what it accrues every year. That's
Mr.
correct,
Chair.
$17 million?
Correct, yes.
What's then the follow-up question for that would be is what is the current balance in that fund?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
At the end of fiscal year 18, it was $34.3 million.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
And just a question, Mr. Chair, and this might be a question for you, or it might be a question for Jeff, or it might be a question for Julie. What is the annual report? Do we get, is there some compilation of the various contracts that come out of the Future Fund? Does it come to us like as a GOAC book so we can see all of the contracts that come out of the governor's office? Because there are a number of things. So I noticed that one of the things that was in there for this coming year from this first handout, that there was $5.5 million for Lake Erie Improvement Corporation. I'm just curious: is that about shrimp? Was that $5.5 million for shrimp that we were spending? And so, I just want to know: how do we get reporting back from that,
Senator? I'll allow you to ask that question. Answer that if you can, because normally we don't allow.
Mr. Chair, right. And in some ways, so maybe there's two questions there. One is, what's the reporting process? I just don't even understand how we get information about the contract signed under the Future Fund, how those come back to us. And then the second part was, I'm curious about that $5.5 million.
Well, I understand that, but you're getting great latitude, being that you're the sponsor of the bill. So I'm going to let this one slide, but you probably shouldn't be asking questions of your bill before we get to committee discussion.
Sorry, thank you.
That's okay, but I know they have the answer, so if they would like to answer, they sure can, because I know it's there, I know the information's public, so that's why.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Travis Dovery, the Administrative Services Director with GUED. So I'm going to recap the question, Senator Nezema, make sure I have them clear. Annual reporting mechanism. So all the Future Fund awards are put out on the GUED website on the Public Records tab that has a list by calendar year that is out there. Every award has a grant number associated with it, and then that grant number can be referenced on OpenSD. So all those agreements are posted online. There's no formal report compiled because it's public record and widely available. The second question on the $5.5 million to Lake Erie Improvement Corp, yes, it was related to the True Shrimp announcement. Perfect example of a deal the state wouldn't have been able to get without Future Fund.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Real quick, due to time constraints, I would like to, as Chair, open it up to amendments at this point. We have an amendment in front of us. I'd like to quickly talk about that if we could.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment at the desk. It is 116ZA.
All right. An amendment has been moved. Senate Bill 116 Zulu Alpha, and moved by Partridge, second by Maher, sorry. Any comments on that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, what this amendment does is it deletes the $5 million and puts in $1 as we work towards priorities and our appropriations process throughout the session here. We will keep this idea and bill in mind, but for now, this allows the $1 to the bill to stay alive and have the $1 in there in order to keep the discussions going. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration of the amendment.
Any other comments? Senator Nesbitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be supportive of that amendment. Thank you.
Okay. I would also just like to make a comment on this that I liked, I mean, we always like the idea. We always keep the idea in flux. The funding source, that's where we may differ. I would urge us to adopt this amendment right now and then possibly just hold action on the bill and even defer questions till we have a full committee again and have some time. So with that, the motion before us is a motion to amend Senate Bill 116 with 116 Zulu Alpha. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed, or all those in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Senate Bill 116 is as amended. At this time, I would like to defer action, defer testimony on Senate Bill 116 without objection. All right. Anything else? Is there any other public testimony to come before the Senate Appropriations Committee? Any other public testimony? All right. Seeing no other proponent or public testimony, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Wick, seconded by Colbeck. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. We are adjourned.